This program is brought to you from Wisconsin Eye's Margaret Farrow Studio.
This week on Rewind, your week in review. Governor Evers renews calls to use a portion of the state's surplus to cut millions of dollars in taxes. Plus, on the two-year anniversary of the unrest in Kenosha, Republicans are once again using it as a political backdrop. Will their messaging work? And top Republicans are seeking to dismiss a lawsuit targeting the state's 173-year-old abortion ban. All this and more on Rewind, your week in review for August 25th.
Hi, I'm Emily Fannin.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
J.R., we got another busy week in politics, and one of the big headlines of the week was Governor Tony Evers renewing calls for tax cuts. Now, he did this previously. Republicans swiftly rejected it. But now, of course, we're inching closer to November, so he's trying to appease voters with this plan. It would use a portion of the state's, at this point, I would say, massive surplus that is sitting in the coffers. Here's a little bit about what his tax proposal would do. It would cap copays for insulin at $35, repeal the minimum markup law to lower gas prices, and cut income taxes by 10% for individuals earning less than $100,000 and families for $150,000. There's kind of other proposals that are in there as well that could benefit seniors, expand property tax relief for veterans, and individuals with disabilities. Now, it didn't take too long for Republicans to say, absolutely not, we're not going to do this. Evers has tried multiple times to try to use some of the surplus to give back to families to help them, especially right now with inflation. Assembly Speaker Robin Voss issued a joint statement with Senate Majority Leader Devin Lemahieu. Voss said, we are not going to jeopardize future budgets in the midst of a recession to fund a tax gimmick. Almost the same wording that we heard, JR, from the last time you proposed this, which was issuing $150 checks to every resident. Let's first hear from Governor Evers, and we'll digest his plan a little bit more.
I hear leaders on the other side of the aisle say that they want to give taxpayers money back to taxpayers, but I've yet to see it. Time and time again, I laid out plans to do just that, including some of these proposals I'm proposing or talking about today. And they've downright refused. So let's put our money where our mouth is. Let's show up for the people of our state. Let's get this money back to Wisconsinites who can really use it.
So, JR, I'm sure we're going to see, and Evers is already doing it, even after Republicans said, no way, Jose. He's still on the campaign trail. Mm-hmm. Look what I'm trying to do for you to help you ease inflation costs. It's likely we're going to continue seeing him this messaging, but the headlines aren't really going to stay there.
No, a couple things to note. One, Evers is trying to take credit, and he is taking credit for the tax cuts he signed that drives Republicans crazy because they authored them, right? So he is trying to bolster his tax-cutting credentials. Now, that's an interesting dynamic for a Democrat because Democrats have a reputation for raising taxes, right? Here's a guy saying, I want to cut your taxes. Also interesting that you have a situation where it's the Democrat saying, it's taxpayers' money, give it back. Republicans saying, let's hold on to it for a little while. A couple of key differences between this package and one that Evers proposed in January. The January one with the $150 per person, that's technically spending. That required then Evers propose a big boost in education spending because of the COVID money. Remember, you have to maintain the same share of spending on education in your budget as a state to qualify for K-12 COVID money. This doesn't have any COVID matching grant money in essentially because it's all reduction in tax essentially, right? So it's a much smaller price tag, like $600 million versus $1.7 billion from the spring. Two, Republicans want to hold on the money because they want to do a big tax cut, maybe even tax overhaul, come next session. The question is, who will be governor? I would bet you money that the next budget will cut taxes. The question is how. Evers, for example, is if he's reelected, would not want to sign a reduction in the top income tax bracket we have in Wisconsin. The last few years, Republicans have been whacking away at the lower brackets or collapsing them because we have your income goes through these multiple brackets, right? At each step, you get taxed more. The top bracket in Wisconsin, the highest in the country, but that affects people who make quite a bit of money. Obviously, if you lower that top bracket, you affect the wealthy disproportionately. People would argue, well, they make the most, they pay the most. That's going to happen. Again, Evers will not sign that. Republicans, they talk about going to a flat tax or even doing away with the income tax. With the surplus we're talking about, and it is huge, you could have the beginning steps of doing away with the income tax or going to a flat tax without raising the sales tax. I mean, it's a down payment on it, but that would be an option. But you'd have to have a Governor Michaels to do that because Evers is not going to sign something like that.
And, of course, you just led into our next slide that we're going to show people of the massive pot of money that the state has right now. Now, state collections went to $1.6 billion higher than revenue projections previously. And it just keeps getting higher. The Department of Revenue keeps coming out with good news, but we're not being able to touch that money quite yet. Individual income tax collections were $1 billion higher than expected. Corporate tax collections, $545.5 million higher. The Evers administration will likely release a report in October that accounts for spending in the fiscal year. And LFB also had projected in January that the state would finish in about a surplus of $2.8 billion and $3.9 billion at the end of the biennium. So, whole lots of money here.
So, Evers, when he introduced his tax package, talked about we're going to be north of $5 billion for a surplus. So I'm going to be a budget wonk for a second to say yes, but let's hold on for a second. So this is just for the current fiscal, the most recent fiscal end of June 30th. We only have the revenue side of this equation. We need the spending side to know like what the final numbers were on 21-22. If spending hit what projections were, what was budgeted, then we're talking about being $4.4 billion to the good in the last fiscal year alone, like having a surplus of that much. That becomes your starting balance the second year of the budget. Now, the Fiscal Bureau in January made projections on that second year. They had revenues exceeding expenditures. You might be tempted to go, okay, I'm taking my $4.8 billion, adding this money and saying I'm going to be $5.5 billion-ish for a surplus at the end of the current budget. But a couple things to note. One, there's uncertainty about the second year of the biennium. We could hit it. Some people say we're in a recession right now. We're not seeing it impact job growth or people having employment. Businesses seem to be doing okay. Same with income taxes. So it may not be a big blow, but it could impact that. There's some uncertainty there. So what I can tell you is we're in the ballpark of $4.4 billion for a surplus at the end of the last fiscal year. We'll get that spending side in October. Then in November, we get the projection for the first time on what is going to happen in the next biennium. Fiscal Bureau then in January do its own projection to kind of shore up the numbers, and we'll have our real base for them. Also worth noting, again, despite the increased revenue growth, there'll be no transfer to the rainy day fund because we have maxed that fund out. There's $1.7 billion in the rainy day fund. State law says that whenever you have excess growth, you have to put some in the rainy day fund until it hits 5% of basically the state budget. We are well beyond that. So we are good for the rainy day fund going forward. So we have a lot of money, and that rainy day fund could be tapped as well for stuff. They're not going to because, you know, it's not a rainy day. But there's a lot of money sitting around, and what's driving it is stimulus money. I mean, COVID money has been flowing into coffers. It is increasing inflation or contributing to inflation, but it also means there's more money flowing around the economy, which means more revenues for taxes. That is helping build this. It's unlike anything I've ever seen. Put it this way. My first budget, that full budget I covered in 2001, 2003, the entire budget for GPR was $23.5 billion. We're talking a surplus of $5 billion. That's how much money we're talking about. Yeah, it's a lot.
And we'll see if Republicans get creative, right? I mean, you made a good point. Who's going to be governor to sign off on any of this in January when they start discussing this and what they're going to lay out? I mean, it's definitely something that's going to be an interest to a lot of us in the Capitol and, of course, residents of Wisconsin. And maybe they'll see a tax cut and maybe more, right?
Yeah.
There's more to come. Also, this week embarked the Kenosha Unrest University, or excuse me, anniversary, the two-year anniversary of the unrest that happened that broke out in the summer of 2020. This also was all erupted after Jacob Blake was shot several times by a white Kenosha police officer. And Republican candidates have used this as a political backdrop for a long time. But it was the first time we saw Tim Michaels be joined by Congressman Brian Stile. And Attorney General candidate Eric Toney was also there. I was there. They kind of did this walk-around tour of some businesses that were damaged, kind of after the aftermath that left a lot of dozens of buildings destroyed. And two people, unfortunately, died in some of those violent violent protests. So let's, of course, the messaging here was put the blame on Evers. He didn't do enough. He didn't act soon enough to send in the National Guard. We'll get into the weeds about the political banter there. But let's first hear from Michaels. He hosted a roundtable with some law enforcement and some other elected officials from Kenosha there. And then Governor Evers' response to Michaels' claims that, quote unquote, Evers failed Kenosha. Let's take a listen.
The world craves leadership. And when they don't find it, they seek it elsewhere. They should have found leadership from the governor. They should have found leadership from the attorney general. It didn't happen. Kenosha was ignored. And as a result, Kenosha burned. And it will never happen again. I've been about leadership my entire life. And my greatest honor will be to provide leadership for the hardworking, taxpaying, law-abiding citizens of Wisconsin. And I give you my pledge that Kenosha nor any other community in Wisconsin will ever burn again.
So it's easy for people now to sit back and say, well, it's all Evers' fault. I mean, that's ridiculous. I did exactly what they asked me to do. Feel free. People should feel free to talk to the leadership in Kenosha. They will agree. So it's a dead issue. Obviously, we want Kenosha to recover and move to a better place, but at the end of the day, blaming me for that situation, it's just dead wrong, and it's just politics as usual.
We've seen former President Donald Trump make a visit to Kenosha. We've seen President Joe Biden make a visit to Kenosha. I mean, this has been a political epicenter, I guess you can say, of Wisconsin politics, of a lot of lawmakers trying to go there and make a point. Mm-hmm. And I think it's definitely messaging that we've talked about on the show multiple times of Evers is going to continue to face these questions about what did you do, what did you not do. I think to lay out the facts, though, Governor Evers did call in the National Guard about, I believe, 150 troops less than 24 hours after Jacob Blake was shot. Then 2 days later, he requested additional 500 troops to go down there. But overall, Republicans and elected officials that were there at this roundtable said it just simply wasn't enough. He could have acted sooner. So it's something that we're going to keep hearing. And my question is, will just people of Kenosha care? Mm-hmm. Is people across the state going to still think this top of mind when heading into the polls?
So obviously, Michael's campaign sees something in polling about safety being an issue. They are going to hit on this hard. Now, the backdrop to that issue is what we've seen in special elections nationally last month. But it seems like the ground is shifting to more of a neutral territory for Democrats. We'll get that in a second. But with Kenosha, one, people of Kenosha will probably remember. Go back to 2018, then Governor Scott Walker killed a proposal for a casino in Kenosha County. That was thought to be part of the reason why he didn't do very well in Kenosha County in 2018. Fast forward to now, there's an expectation that Evers will struggle in Kenosha County. Those wounds are still fresh. The question is if people elsewhere moved on. The challenge for Evers is, his answer to these questions is, I did what I was asked. So you go back, Jacob Blake was shot in the evening of a Sunday, right? The call came in to the state to call up the National Guard 2, 3 a.m. Mm-hmm. Monday morning. The National Guard doesn't sit at the armory waiting for a call. They have real lives. They are people doing other things who are called in to come up to duty. So they got there Monday night, 125. The next night, 250. Evers turned down the offer from the Trump administration in this process to send in troops, federal troops, the Department of Homeland Security. He was also calling the former President Trump to send in more. And Evers was like, we don't want that from you. And they kept increasing it, but Evers has to explain that process, right? It's easier to say Evers let Kenosha burn than it is to explain what Evers did. So that's a challenge for him. But again, going back to the big picture, I'm wondering, is crime going to be a dominant issue come October, or are we seeing this ground shift? Because you go to New York, special election for a congressional seat, Democrat won in a kind of surprising margin. Look at what happened again in Minnesota a couple weeks ago. Again, special election where the gap was much different than what we saw in 2020. Democrats feel buoyed by that abortion is driving what's going on, that we are seeing good things for Democrats, especially in suburban areas where college-educated female voters are saying this is too much, which is why you're seeing Tim Michaels get hit on TV right now by the Evers campaign about abortion. Also in their group is up with an ad hitting Michaels on his comments at the 1849 abortion ban mirror his own views on what's going on. That's why that's going on. I just don't know what's going to matter more in October. No, by the way, what are gas prices? I've been saying this for a long time. It's $5 a gallon end of October. Democrats are in a lot of trouble. $3 a gallon, they're in decent shape. Where's it end up in that spectrum in about 2 months?
And a lot of voters vote with their wallet.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Speaking of abortion, you just brought that up. GOP lawmakers, I should say GOP leadership, seeks to dismiss the abortion lawsuit that was filed by Attorney General Josh Call and Governor Tony Evers. They filed a motion to dismiss it, which is challenging Wisconsin's 1849 abortion ban that bans all abortions except if a mother's life is at risk. Now, Senate President Chris Kapica, Senate Majority Leader Devin Lemieux, and Assembly Speaker Robin Voss were all named in as defendants in this lawsuit, argue that their motion is basically enacting the ban and it could remain in place, you know, regardless of the law. And we've heard Attorney General Josh Call multiple times saying this law is outdated, that doesn't stand a chance. So this is kind of just more of the continuation mm-hmm. of where this case will ultimately end up.
Republicans say, look, we can't enforce the law, therefore you shouldn't sue us about the law. It's not our responsibility. The responsibility is placed upon district attorneys who are not part of the lawsuit, and Josh Call, who is the state's top cop as attorney general. They have power to enforce this. We do not. Therefore, they're improper parties. The second part of the argument is that you shouldn't be going after these guys, and that the argument that the subsequent abortion laws passed by the legislature do not supersede that 1849 ban. So what Call argued was because you passed things like in 2015, a ban on abortion after 20 weeks in Wisconsin, that supersedes 1849, that makes it null and void. Republicans saying actually no, because we didn't impact that statute. We added things, doesn't matter though. So there's that. We now have a briefing schedule coming up. It'll be a while before this gets done. I don't know if it'll be resolved before October or the November election. But we're just laying out the battle lines in court of what's going to happen in this lawsuit.
And also, I should say, last week there was more of a continuation of a story addressing opioid funds that are now kind of in limbo after mm-hmm. Republicans on the Joint Finance Committee anonymously objected to settlement funding that is coming into Wisconsin. Now, in total, we're expected to see about $31 million in related to drug manufacturers and their role in the opioid ongoing crisis. Now, what happened is basically they said, no, we don't like the Department of Health Services plan, and now it's turning into a political stumping ground for Attorney mm-hmm. General Josh Call, DHS Secretary Karen Timberlake. They've been going across Wisconsin saying, hey, look what Republicans have done. They objected to our plan. It's all on them that we can't release this money to the communities. But the co-chairs, Representative Mark Bourne and Senator Howard Markline on Joint Finance, saying, look, we just objected because we didn't like how basically where the resources were going. And in a quote, they said basically they're working diligently with colleagues and stakeholders to improve the quote-unquote deficiencies of the plan to give consideration to other programs. Now, what was in DHS's plan was only about $6 million, because that's all what the state has received as of July. And the plan would, along the lines, do some things, distribute about $2 million to Narcan, drug prevention efforts. So it didn't seem like anything political, but I think Republicans, there is kind of a political maybe angle to this that they don't want to give any victories to the Evers administration during an election year, saying we want our plan approved instead of yours. Before we get into the weeds of this, let's first take a listen of one of the press conferences that we heard of Democrats kind of slamming Republicans for this action. Let's take a listen.
Somewhere in Wisconsin right now today has overdosed a couple of minutes ago. Is Narcan available? Don't know. Would it help? It brings them back to life. And the idea that we could spend $3 million and get Narcan all over the state of Wisconsin is so important. Opioid issues, especially in rural parts of this state, where Howard Markline represents, it's a problem. And he knows that. Mark Bourne knows it's a problem. Every single one of those guys on finance on the other side of the aisle, they know it's a problem. And the audacity for them to say at least no to that $6 million, they could have let the $6 million go and said no to everything else. But they didn't do that. And they're doing it because they can. They're doing it because I believe it's political. They'll tell you drugs and death isn't political. Well, if it isn't, where's the $6 million?
So as of right now, there is nothing scheduled or on the calendar for Joint Finance to meet. So in a sense, the longer that Republicans wait to schedule this next hearing to approve or deny this funding plan, I think the longer the Democrats are going to be on the campaign trail talking about it.
So the question is, how long is it delay? A couple weeks, a couple months? What's it going to be? The passive review process for joint finance allows any member to object to a plan from an agency. Basically, you have 14 days. Once you get it, the committee gets it for anybody. It could be Democrat or Republican to object, or if nobody objects, it goes into effect. The objection was raised. Now it triggers a requirement of a hearing to vote on a plan. The question is, what's the plan going to be? How long is it going to take? The longer they take, the longer they're going to see Democrats try to make political points out of this because they are holding up an enactment or disbursement of this money.
And also this week, there was a class action lawsuit, the second one actually filed against the state and Governor Tony Evers, specifically the Wisconsin Public Defender Board, over this longstanding issue of not having enough public defenders to represent people who are sometimes waiting behind bars, sometimes weeks in this lawsuit. It says some people have been waiting months just to get representation. So the lawsuit is demanding Evers and other defendants to either appoint lawyers who need them or dismiss their criminal charges against them. Basically stating in that lawsuit that I read through, they stated the Wisconsin Supreme Court basically calling it insufficient if you don't get legal representation within 14 days. So that's kind of their main argument here. But this is a much broader issue, JR, that has been going on long before the pandemic. Of course, it got way worse during the pandemic. You have caseloads, backlogs. You don't have enough attorneys. You don't have enough assistant staff to help people even field calls. And it's been a problem that's been going on for a long time. And there was a similar lawsuit in 2019 that started in federal court, and then it was eventually dismissed by a Dane County judge. But one of the lead attorneys that I spoke to today basically says, we think this is going to be different. We're sticking with it filed in Brown County and then hopefully need to address the issue there. So we'll see what happens here. But this is, I guess, no big surprise of this issue that's been going on for quite some time.
The backstory is there have been efforts in the last several budgets by the, I call them the Judicial System Coalition. So usually you have public defenders, the court system, and district attorneys kind of like advocating for themselves. The last couple of budgets, they kind of joined forces to tell the Joint Finance Committee, look, this is what we need to make the system work. And the push with public defenders has been to raise rates, pay rates for those who are on staff, and two, if there isn't somebody available, raise the reimbursement rate for taking on a case as a private attorney. The rates are not very high. It has become a challenge to get people to take these cases. It exacerbates the problem that you're seeing here in this lawsuit.
All right, let's get to Stock Picks. We're back on Stock Picks this week. Rising this week is public employee
vacancies.
I almost said vaccines. I didn't want my glasses on.
A couple different things going on. So one, we have a Wisconsin Policy Forum report that we saw a record number of people leave employment of state and local governments last year after another big year the year before. What's happening? Same thing happening to the workforce in general. Pay issues, post-COVID-19 kind of issues, people retiring, not wanting to go in the do something else, change jobs. It's straining the local workforces. Oh, by the way, at the state level, a couple weeks ago, Governor Evers quietly raised the pay rates, minimum pay rates for about 280 job classifications in Wisconsin because they're having a problem retaining and attracting talent to these jobs. I think they have like 3,600 employees were affected by the increase, and they have 1,900 vacancies in those jobs they're trying to fill. Well, why is it hard to fill them? Well, because there are fewer people wanting to work. Our unemployment rate ticked up a little bit last month, still a record low, while our labor participation rate dropped a little bit last month. We talked before, the boomers are retiring. The more boomers retire, the lower your labor participation rate goes because they're not workforce anymore. It's hard to fill all these jobs that we need people to do.
It's one of those other headlines of this great recession that we're seeing, and this one specifically kind of gave us a pretty good inside look about state employees as well. Mix this week, I'm going to let you handle this story, JR, because you were one of the first to report on it. It's specifically about a candidate for the 6th Assembly District, and we're talking about Peter Schmidt here.
Yeah, so usually writing campaigns are very difficult. My question is, what would happen to the writing campaign if you had the establishment behind the writing candidate? So Peter Schmidt is a guy up in the 6th Assembly District, Republican, won a six-way primary, narrowly. The canvass this week came back, upheld his victory by like 71 votes. Dean Newbert, who is the small business owner up there who came in second place, did not seek a recount, but is thinking about a write-in. Okay, write-ins happen all the time, but here's the catch. Peter Schmidt, back in 2019, was charged with choking an employee in his family farm and eventually pled down to misdemeanor counts. It was kind of known about up there, but didn't get a lot of play. Now, the Shawnee County GOP wrote a letter after Peter won the primary saying, we're censuring you. You can't have your materials in our office. You can't come to events and put stuff up. That happened because all of the countywide elected GOP officials in Shawnee County said, we don't be associated with this guy because of his criminal record. Okay, so now what? If you're Dean Neubert, he told me this week, he is gauging if there's support for a write-in campaign. Again, they are not easy. You have to get people to, you can register with the state, you get people to write in your name, you know, have a campaign to know what's going on. You won't be in the ballot, however. But what happens when the establishment gets behind you? So the Shawnee County folks are like, yeah, if you know this guy runs, we might get behind him. That'd be fascinating to see what's going to happen if that happens. And we asked the Shawnee County GOP this week, well, why didn't you do this earlier? Why didn't you, like, say something? They said, we never thought Peter would win. So we didn't vet the candidates the way we should have. That opened the door to this. It's going to be fascinating to see what's going to happen with that that race. Now, this is like a plus 28 GOP district. It is deep red, right? So you'd have to have, I'm trying to do the math of how you'd even get there as a Democrat. Now, the Democrat who's on the ballot, by the way, has own legal problems some years ago, some small misdemeanor stuff. But what's going to happen if you have a write-in campaign, the Republican candidate on the ballot, the Democrat on the ballot?
It's going to be interesting.
It's a very, very small race, but it's very, very intriguing what's going to happen up there.
Right. And falling this week is the Department of Safety and Professional Services. This has been an ongoing mm-hmm. issue of delays at their agency and people waiting months, sometimes years, just to get their license approval. I mean, this has been in the news, I believe, even since the beginning of the year. Yeah. I did a special report on it in March, and it's just being renewed again as people are still waiting.
What I'm wondering and why I'm bringing it up now is it breaking through in the campaign, right? So the issue's been around for a long time. Look, you can go back actually to when the Walker administration combined agencies to create DISPIS, right? It used to be regulation licensing, went through this kind of whole change. There have been complaints, it's been understaffed, underfinanced the entire time, that there are technology issues. You have the Evers folks saying they're not giving us enough money. You have the legislature saying you have plenty of funds, you're just not doing what you're supposed to be doing, use the money to fix the problem. All kinds of stuff going on. But what I want to know, does it break through? Does it matter? Now, DWD, Workforce Development, and their unemployment issues, you're going to see that in an ad this fall. You're going to see somebody talk about how I waited X months or X years, whatever it was, for an employment check during COVID-19 because Evers administration failed, right? That's going to happen. I don't know this breaks through the same way because it's a little more muddy, you know?
Right.
You're waiting for a license. How's that work? I got it, but it took longer to get it. I'm not sure it's the same kind of argument, but it could be liability for Evers, and Republicans are really frustrated it's not breaking through more because I think it's a failure of the administration that should be talked about a lot more.
And I think maybe if they tied it into the worker shortage aspect, right? We can't get enough healthcare workers. We can't get enough people mm-hmm. into this agency. It's all because of the worker shortage, and it's because of DSPS. I mean, yeah. we'll see, but that's probably a message that we might see. But I would agree. I haven't really seen it really break through other than just a few reports that have been out there. All right, that will do it for this week. Thanks so much for joining us. I'm Emily Fannin.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
We'll see you next week.
This program was brought to you from Wisconsin Eye's Margaret Farrow Studio.